Something is trying to get inside my body.
And you want to sleep with me.
We can't go to camp without our physicals now, can we?
La plume de matante.
I take great relish in savoring each separate horror. I roll them over on my tongue.
Don't, Lord Byron. Don't remind me of it tonight.
Sometimes I have wondered whether life wouldn't be much more amusing if we were all devils.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Yes, I've always dreamed of a little girl just like you.
Dear Mom and Dad, I've been at a sleepaway camp for almost 3 weeks. And I'm getting very scared.
Welcome to sleepaway camp. Someone is watching you.
Hey, Baba, Reba!
Someone is waiting for you. Someone wants to scare you to death.
Turn it! Turn the wheel!
Oh my God!
Sleepaway camp. You won't be coming home.
Welcome to Screaming Queens, the horror podcast with a queer little eye. Looking at all of your bulges out there in the dark. My name is Jonathan Larkin.
I'm Jonathan Butler.
I'm Stephen Moore.
I'm Moss Infinity.
And I'm Aunt Martha.
Really?
Oh no, that just wouldn't do. So we are talking kitsch camp classics and other things that start with K. And this film is Sleepaway Camp by name. And by nature, from 1983. By 1983, we'd had Friday the 13th, we'd had Friday the 13th Part 2, we'd had The Burning, various other films set in summer camps that were about girls who got their tits out, got shagged, and got murdered. And then along came a film where the girls didn't get the tits out, but the boys got the bums out, the boys got the legs out, and at one point a boy gets his dick out, which we will get to. And we got a weird, queer, just the most strange, wonderfully bad, badly wonderful slasher movie
You couldn't make it like that on purpose if you tried, I don't think.
Well, I don't know.
I don't think you could.
No, it's a perfect, like, shitstorm of...
It's a perfect storm.
It doesn't, like, it shouldn't have happened, it shouldn't work.
It's a perfect storm of people that can't act, trying to act.
What do you say it's the showgirls of horror?
I think showgirls is the showgirls of horror.
It's the horror of showgirls. The premise is, two young children, Angela and Peter, are out for the day in the boat with their gay dad.
I just forgot about that scene.
Just dad. We don't know the gay at this
point. Spoiler alert. Oh. With their dad. And there's an accident. And someone very dramatic crashes into their boat and kills them. Traumatised by the events, a few years later, Angela has grown up.
Shy, reclusive.
Yeah. She's shy and reclusive, flat-chested. And she and her cousin Ricky are sent off to camp by their amazing Aunt Martha. Now, can we just start with Aunt Martha, please? Because
I can't.
The most wonderful thing I've ever seen in my life. How do you... How? What? Why?
She's the least a character from another film.
Yeah.
All together.
In the style of Nancy's mum in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes. It's like it's the character and the direction that the actress has been given or hasn't been given to actually to deliver that part.
Sorry,
is from a different film.
Yeah.
Hurry, sweeties! We don't want to be late for the boss!
Goodness, no. No, that wouldn't do at all.
Richard, Angela! Oh, here you are. Look what I did. I packed you and your cousin some goodies for the ride up to camp. Wasn't that nice of me,
Any chips?
Why, of course. I believe there's a whole bag.
Well, I'm almost sure of it.
Angela,
Isn't there anything special my little girl would care for?
We gotta go, Mom. It's getting late.
Why, of course you do, dear. We wouldn't want them to leave without us, now would we?
Yeah, I don't know how and whether the actress was just a bit of a crank as well. Like, yeah, it feels like very genuine. She's just a bit of a weirdo. As opposed to acting it.
I think actually there probably was direction, because it is trying to set up something for later on in the film, or give you an explanation of something else that happens later on in the film. But she's so over everything.
Yeah, so over the top.
I did some searching on the actress on IMDb. Her name's Desiree Gold. Well done, Desiree. Yes. Round of applause. And so the trivia on Desiree Gold in her biography is, during her long hiatus after Sleepaway Camp, Desiree became a real estate agent, but remains open to the idea of acting again.
We want to see you again, Desiree.
We need to write her a vehicle. If anyone out there knows who Desiree is, tell her that we love her with all of our little queer hearts, and put it in touch with us at screamerqueens@gmail.com. But anyway, so to sum up Aunt Martha, she is a homemaker on Valium, lithium.
Something.
She's also a doctor.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust her.
No, she's not well. She is a doctor. Is she a doctor?
Because she says,
even though I am a real doctor.
She says, nobody goes to camp without their medicals, but don't tell anyone how you got them. That just wouldn't do it.
But I never realised when I watched it the first couple of times why she makes the medicals herself.
Mm. Oh, yes. We do realise.
I didn't get that the first couple of times when I was watching it this time, and I went, oh.
Yours truly. Wasn't that nice of me?
What are they?
Why, they're your physicals, of course. We can't go to camp without our physicals now, can we? Just be careful not to tell anyone how you got them. Oh, no, I'm afraid that they wouldn't approve of that at all. Even though they know that I am a doctor.
No matter what they do, I'll never tell.
Oh, you're such a dear.
She almost seems to be breaking the fourth wall, I think.
Well, she does. Yeah. She breaks the fourth wall. That's the most amazing part of the film, is that she talks to the children in a very creepy but overprotective way, but then will turn to camera, finger to chin, and say, that wouldn't do at all, or things like that. It really does have to be seen to be believed. So this film, from the opening moments, we are in Hot Dad Central.
Yep.
Hairy chests, tiny shorts, hairy legs. We go from hot dad to hot boy in a boat in tiny, tiny shorts, who's about to kill hot dad and his children. And a girl on water skis whose acting is sublime.
That's a word.
She tries to warn them that they're going to run into this poor family, and the way she screams and responds to what they do is unbelievable. I hope there's a sound clip, because I'm going to put that in. And then, so yeah, 8 years later, Aunt Martha sends Angela and Ricky off to camp. What happens when they get to camp?
Well, the children arrive, scampering through the wilderness and camp to find their huts, and the kitchen staff appear to be standing around, awaiting their arrival and commenting on how hot they are.
Look at all that young, fresh chicken. Where I come from, we call them baldies. Makes your mouth water, don't it?
Artie, they're too young to even understand what's on your mind.
Then, good buddy, there ain't no such thing as being too young. You're just too old.
It's fresh young chickens, he calls them, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I call them baldies.
The baldies? Yeah. In particular, the head chef.
The head chef is a paedophile. And whenever he makes a paedophilic comment, everyone else just goes, oh, there he goes again. Shucks.
But like Blackman, he was like, later on he goes, oh, it was funny, he had the devil inside him. Do you think he spent like the entire time that he's in the film talking about how he wants to like have his way with these kids? I think he was more than just a little bit evil.
Yeah.
His comment, there's no such thing as too old. It's too young. It just means you're too old.
Where to live your life, but this is just one of those moments in the film where anything remotely PC goes out the window, and it is refreshing. in a world where we have to mind our P's and Q's on everything that we say, but it's also truly, truly shocking, isn't it?
It is shocking.
Just to see the way that was handled back then. I mean, there were films back then in 1983 that would have handled this much more sensitively. You know, it's not just a sign of the times, it's a sign of the madness of this film and how it got made.
It's just so casual. It's not even like, there's no big deal made about it. It's just very, very casually done. Yeah.
No, but we know what happens to that guy, so I think he does get
his comeuppance. His comeuppance is quite bizarre, isn't it?
I still don't really understand it. Why would you need a pan of water that's 7 foot tall?
It's basically a vat.
Because there's a lot of kids and a lot of corner cobs.
But how would you even get down to the bottom of it?
The ones
to get things out of it.
Wouldn't you have an extra long spoon?
There's this one company just makes really big pans, and they also have to make really big spoons. Really long spoons.
The really big spoon and pan company. Acme spoons.
It makes no logical sense, really. Unless you wanted to boil a person.
Well, that which happens, basically. So the Peter Philip Cook is then left alone by the camp counsellors with Angela in a walk-in fridge, and is about to show her something she'll really like, apparently, by unzipping his pants. And then little Ricky, who's adorable, comes to his cousin's rescue, doesn't he? But no one sort of listens to them, and the paedophile gets away with it right up until somebody creeps in behind him as he stood on a stool over the 7 foot tall pan of boiling water, and it's pushed over, so he's scalded, basically. And
which is really graphic.
The makeup's really good as well.
Yeah.
There's like a blister that forms on his face.
It bubbles live.
It's amazing.
That is kind of out of place for the rest of the film, with how effectively, like, actually good. Like, not just good in its amazingly bad way. It was actually a good effect. I was like, wow.
It leads to one of my favourite scenes, where he's carted off screaming in agony.
Mel
says, what's the prognosis, doc? And the doc says, well, he's badly burned all over. and then the doctor keeps going on about the man is in so much agony. He goes on for like 5 minutes about how much agony
the pain must be incredible.
It's like something from Father Time.
I'm afraid I don't carry a sedative strong enough to mask the kind of agony he's in right now. Every nerve in his body must feel like it's on fire.
What's the prognosis, Doc?
Well, he's badly burned all over, especially his face.
How about his eyes?
Too early to tell. Jesus, the pain must be incredible.
Poor guy must be going crazy.
Yeah, if he's lucky.
Look, can we move this along, please?
I think that was to make the point that the Peter guy was, he didn't just die, he was like, no, he's suffering,
a lot. Yeah, he survives, so he's really been pained,
doesn't he?
Yeah. The hammer at home.
Doesn't give single fuck, doesn't give the first fuck, does he? He's like, oh yeah, he's in loads of pain, come
out of it. Yeah, the thing is as well, what I noticed watching it again this time, is they give it away right straight away that the killer's a kid, as he says, get out of here, kid.
Yeah.
And it's filmed from the level of a child.
Yeah, it's a
kid's hands come into the frame. So you know straight away it's one of the kids.
Yeah, well, I suppose you know it's going to be that, but you don't know who it's going to be, do you, I suppose?
No. So throughout, from here on in, we're introduced to a slew of... I think really, and the acting isn't great, but a lot of the kids in it are adorable, I think.
Yeah.
I think the little romance that develops between Paul and Angela.
I think the performances are genuine. They're not good, but they're genuine, at least, I think.
Naturalistic, we call them.
He's cute. They're the cute little couple.
They're so lovely. The young kid, the actual kids are great, and then you've got the next level up of the flesh that's on show, and instead of it being girls, in this film it's boys, which is just incredible on two levels, because it's obviously great to pair off them, but also that someone thought to make this film and make it about the boys. How? You know, I've read and I've been doing a bit of research, and the director, Robert Hiltzik, he's never clearly stated why. He's never given an actual full explanation of why the film is the way it is and why it's got this different slant to all the other slashes that were around at the time. So we're introduced to a prototype Mario Lopez called Gene, who wears crop top and denim cut off shorts.
Yeah.
And it's like the quintessential 80s gay porn wank fantasy, basically.
Yeah.
And him and a couple of the others, you would think you'd stumbled onto a Catalina video film. Just the way they look is unbelievable. I did some research on him as well, played by an actor called Frank Trent Saladino, and he made one other film that year in Speedos.
Is that what it's called?
No, it's called The First Turn On, and it's on YouTube. go on there and have a look. Oh. It's on there in full.
Did you research that as well? Yeah,
I did thorough research. it's quite a mad that the men are made into these sex objects rather than the women.
I appreciate it thoroughly.
Yeah,
I think Cersei short shorts and crop tops are men need to be a thing again. I'm a little bit in love.
Jonathan disagrees because tell them about the German guy.
No. I saw a German man at a metal festival once with a crop top and denim cutoffs, but he still had them from the 80s. So he didn't have the physique for it, shall we say. I think the mullet and the aviators probably didn't help either.
Wow.
That's what I was going to comment on it as well. It seems odd, but it might be it's trying to be so macho that it wanders into homoerotism.
Do you think that's what it is?
Some of it is definitely Ron. Even looks like someone in Manowar. He looks like he's in an 80s cheesy metal band.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think it's tried to be so macho that it's gone way too far and just wandered into homoerotism, which it does happen. But then there's a weird line you get that with. Like, especially a lot of like metal bands in the 80s were kind of accused of that, you know, we're going for so macho, but it just comes off as homoerotic.
Yeah. There's a wonderful softball game in denim cutoff with the great line, "Eat shit and die, Ricky," and Ricky says, "Eat shit and live."
It's a great comeback.
But that's a really good line.
His delivery of it was just brilliant.
Yeah.
Someone has to come back as well. Someone says to Angela, "How come you're so fucked up?" And her comeback is, "Shut up, dick face." Not enough people say dick face. I don't know.
And Ricky, the cousin, is the most foul mouthed little boy I've ever seen on a film. The way he shouts, "Cocksucker, you prick!"
Yeah.
Throughout the film. So we are also introduced to Judy. Can we just talk about Judy, the iconic?
Judy is incredible. I feel her power emanates from her chin. Everything she says seems to be chin-based. She really accentuates every noun. Her frizzy hair, her ponytail.
Side pony
to death. I love her.
Her t-shirt that says Judy on it.
Judy, yeah.
She just that chin out. Yeah. It's great attitude, doesn't she? And she's just so horrible and mean and nasty, and you just love her and you just want to be a mate.
The actress relishes it, doesn't she? She relishes every vile word. The best line is when she says that Angela hasn't got hair down below. And then she says, "You're a real carpenter's dream. The flat is a board and needs a screw." And these are meant to be like 14.
Hey, Angela. How come you never take showers when the rest of us do? Huh? You queer or something? Oh, I know what it is. You haven't reached puberty yet. Is that it? I bet you don't even have your period. That's enough, Judy. Angela's allowed to shower in the morning or any other time she wants to. Yeah. She takes showers when no one can see. She has no hair down below. Judy, she's a real carpenter's dream. The lad is a board and needs a screw. That's enough! Fuck off!
I think some of the actors were actually for
them. I was trying to figure out how old the people were.
Yeah, I think the one who played Angela was about 12 or 13.
Yeah. Judy's much older.
Yeah.
You can tell.
I think, again, that was the only film she was in. Something she did in after that.
I didn't get...
She's brilliant.
She's amazing. And her swimsuits get smaller as the film progresses as well.
I didn't get anything about age in this film. Didn't make any sense to me. Because I was like, some of the kids were like really young. And then you had like the group of older kids that seemed to be a lot older, closer to the counsellor age. But then they had the counsellors. And they didn't seem to be part of the councils because they were all really fucking horrible people.
Yeah.
I just did not understand how old anyone was. I couldn't figure it out.
Because there's the councillor Meg, isn't there, who spells her name out when she introduces herself.
Yeah.
Her name's Meg. M-E-G. Why?
How else would you spell Meg?
And she becomes Judy's sidekick, doesn't she? And it's like, how? Judy's meant to be a child and you're meant to be the counsellor who's looking
after her. Doesn't she try and go on a date with Mel as well?
Yeah, she's like, she actively chases the dirty old man who runs the place. To go on a date with him. Judy, so this is sort of implied, isn't it? But Judy is basically raped with hot air, with hot air strings.
Yeah.
Tongue? Is this like
a
straightened tongue?
Yeah, straightened tongue. That's a great way to go.
Does a kill that we've passed over with the wasp nest?
Yeah, the boy in blue shorts who dies on the toilet.
That's a specifically cruel and evil death.
He throws a water balloon at Angela, doesn't he? That's why he gets killed.
He stood on the roof, isn't he? I always thought it was a bit weird, and they should have given him an actual allergy earlier in the film, so we knew that could happen.
Yeah.
But like that matters.
No, it just everything in this film was just thrown in.
Yeah, I think there were more films back then than there are now where they cast kids in horror movies.
Mm.
And I think sometimes it really works because you identify more with the kids in a horror film, don't you?
Mm.
I don't know if it was just me as a kid, but I sort of watched some horror movies and wished I was in there and, you know, being part of the adventure and stuff. So it's quite nice to see that.
There's the boat death as well.
Yeah.
The skinny dipper.
Skinny dipper.
The line is, who wants to go skinny dipping with 15 guys and only 5 girls?
Yeah.
Hands up.
But then when the girls don't want to skinny dip, you just says, come on boys, and all the jump in anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's lots of snakes in that water.
Yeah. Don't get caught by a water snake. Yeah, yeah.
Which is a particularly horrible little scene, by the way, when you see the body after the drowning scene. And like the snake slivers
out of his
nose and across that is actually gross.
Yeah.
Again, the actual kills in this are effective.
Yeah, they are.
Even if they're absurd at times,
effective. For me, the absurd. They often like a wasp nest and a kale and tongs up the inches. It's not good.
No, and the bit with the little kids get chopped up.
Yeah,
go camping. I forgot about that.
Oh yeah, that's right, because he takes the little kids off, doesn't he, somewhere else for the day.
It's
not Ron, is it? It's the other guy.
It's one of the other ones who hasn't got a name, I think, and he has to take them out camping for the night, and then two of them are like, we're cold, and takes them back to the car, and then when he comes back, all the other little ones are all chopped up.
After the death in the water scene, I love the fact that the cop comes to investigate him. And he thinks it's suspicious, and the cop genuinely can tell, thinks something's gone on here. And then the camp counselor guy just convinces him by telling him repeatedly, no, no, it's an accident.
Yeah.
Like, it's an accident. And then the cop goes, yeah, I think it was an accident.
The cop also looks like an 80s porn star and has an actual moustache for the first half of the film. And then in the last couple of scenes, he's clearly... he'd shaved his moustache off thinking he didn't have any more work to do and brought him back because it's actually painted on. It's just ridiculous, and they expect you not to notice.
There's a weird thing with it, I actually quite enjoy when the geeky kid keeps getting bullied all the time, and then he pulls like a knife out of his thing and chases the other kid around, and then he gets it confiscated, and he goes, you won't get to see this till the end of summer. Yeah, you just confiscated a knife off someone, you're not going to freaking give it back. He's an 8-year-old kid. I mean, just take it and like get him in, kicked out or something.
I should probably tell somebody about this. Well, that's all Mel cares about. It's like, if people think that if people have been murdered, they might not send the kids, so we'll just talk about it. It's all just accidents.
Yeah, rather than these poor people have died.
Well, that's like with the cook, the first cook. He's gone 2 minutes and he's like, oh, you're the new head chef now. Make the dinner. It's like, I can still smell him.
I'll give you a pay rise.
Yeah.
I'll give you all the pay rise.
And you're all black stereotypes, so you'll take the pay rise.
It's like, I can still smell him cooking in the kitchen. Making the tea.
Yeah. So yeah, much has been made of the ending. We find out after all this has happened, we wonder who the killer is. We know it's one of the kids. It turns out it's Angela, but it doesn't end there. And then we get a flashback to Aunt Martha. And when Angela and her brother were in the accident with the speedboat at the beginning of the film, we realise Angela died and the brother survived and went to live with Aunt Martha. But Aunt Martha always wanted a little girl, so brought the boy up as Angela and basically... turned her into a psychopathic trans serial killer. But much has been made about it. I mean, people say, you know, is the film trying to say that? Because we do get a flashback to a scene where little Angela walks in on her dad and his gay lover in bed. A lot of people say, does that mean that the film is trying to say that if you're a child and see two gay men in bed together, it will turn you into a serial killer?
But there's an inference, isn't there, because it's actually she walks in on them together, but then her and her brother stand in the doorway watching and giggling, and then it cuts to a scene of both of them being in bed, and he goes to reach for her, and it always implies not only if you see two men in bed, will you become a psychopathic serial killer? But maybe as it'll cause you to be a child who abuses other children. It's almost been fed that he's abused his sister.
So there is that argument, but then there's the other argument that it's not saying that. It's saying that the boat accident and the mad aunt turned her into a killer.
Mm.
And up until the boat accident, they're actually portrayed as a happy family.
Mm.
So it's actually saying, so is it actually saying that she was perfectly happy with two gay dads?
My thing is that I just don't know what the two gay dads have to do with anything. Like, you don't really know at the beginning, and then it gets revealed in this really, really over the top dramatic scene with the swirling room that's pitch black except for the bed.
I don't know, hairy chests. We've got hairy chests or something.
There's no actual like point to it. I don't really get why it was revealed at all. Like, in that, it must have been trying to make some point, but your point's not clear.
You see, this is why I was saying before about, you were saying you can't make this kind of film on purpose. And part of me was wondering, we don't know, this is all speculation. As the director's seen Halloween, Friday the 13th, all of these films that are all very much to the same formula. And basically, all those films are geared towards a straight male audience, aren't they? Let's face it. Now, has this director seen that and thought, I'm going to give them something that will absolutely freak them the fuck out? And what is a teenage straight male audience more scared of than gay men?
Gay daddies.
Gay daddies, boys in the female, in a female role with the bits out, and cock.
I suspect it is, because Judy says to Angela at one point, hey Angela, why don't you take showers with the rest of, when the rest of us do, huh? Are you queer or something?
Yeah.
And it's a big clue. It's a big clanging clue in halfway through the film.
Haven't had your pay, did you?
Yeah,
I think he was trying to make some point around that. I think, I think it's, we can look at it from our eyes now and think, we would never make a film like that now, and you would never infer that that's going to disturb anybody. But actually, it's not necessarily that strange an opinion then, 35 years ago, to think that it would have some influence, or it wasn't so long before that film was made that people had that opinion.
But, I mean, the multiplex Friday night rated 15 horror crowd generally are young lads with their girlfriends.
Mm.
And if you made a film now that no spoilers leaked, nobody knew anything about this film, they just knew it was a fucked up horror movie, and it was full of this crowd of people watching this film, and suddenly they were confronted with a horror movie where it was boys in peril, it was boys with hardly any clothes on as opposed to the girls, and then the reveal was that, you know, one of the female heroines was actually a bloke. I think that now was horrifying.
Still
that
shocking.
Audience.
Yeah. I think it'd still get people like in actual shock. Probably get people walking out nowadays.
Yeah.
People would leave and go, what the fuck?
Well, wasn't that basically the twist in Let's Write One In?
Was it? I can't remember.
Because all the way through, you think vampires are girls, and then you find out it's a boy.
But again, you know, that was a film that would have been aimed at, you know, someone who goes to see a foreign horror movie.
Yeah, true, true.
Which isn't.
Not the main.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Slasher movie.
I know what you mean.
Type crowd.
Whereas this is a very...
Oh, yeah, that was aiming at the people who'd been to see Halloween and Friday the 13th and stuff like that. So
part of me thinks it must have been on purpose.
It must have been, because it's a very sexual film, or sexually... It infers all the sexuality as deviant from the moment you've got that paedophilic chef to the girl pursuing the camp owner for a date, to Judy's comment about Angela, and there is all that exposure of male flesh, and there's very little female flesh altogether. Almost the only female flesh that you actually significantly see is Judy in her decreasing costumes. That almost isn't sexual. It's almost about her becoming more and more sassy and full of attitude.
Yeah.
She discards clothes because she's becoming more bullish and confident as a bully.
Yeah.
Maybe the religious rites had something to do with it. They wanted to demonise all sexuality. Especially homosexuality.
Yeah. I'd love to get a proper response from the director, but I don't think there's anything out there that's says fully, you know, why it was the same way.
Maybe it's meant I think probably leave it to our own fearing.
A bit like
decide whether it was on purpose or not.
Was it Freddy's Dead? Is it not Freddy's Dead? Freddy's Revenge, Nightmare 2.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that where he doesn't want to say too much about it.
Yeah.
He wants to leave it up to you to decide.
I think I probably wouldn't enjoy whatever his answer was because I didn't think it'd be the answer I'd want it to be. Because I think maybe we're looking at it. With doe eyes, thinking, hoping it was something good, and really it was just like, it just happened.
Yeah, if you asked them now, he probably wouldn't say, oh, we're trying to demonise gay people, or whatever, because, you know, he wouldn't, he's not going to, even if that was the intention at the time, he would say it now.
Yeah.
It might not have been an overtly that political intention of it, though, mightn't it? It was just like a useful device for the film, isn't it? Because even if he didn't believe it, because there's no reason to necessarily say believed all of that. But it was sufficiently common popular opinion
to be
trans and or gay or whatever was deviant, was something weird. So he's played on that for that film.
Yeah,
I found this film like if we are talking about those things of being deviant and like you know you're playing a trans character who's
just. Stark contrast, John has got to go and get his phone for wrestling. You couldn't find that, could you?
The one straight guy is going to see him.
He's going
the
to
sport of men.
He's had to step out of the conversation about sleepaway camps, homoeroticism to get wrestling tickets.
Mm-hmm.
What were you saying to Steve?
For some talking about like a trans killer, we're talking about you know gay people and how they're perceived and stuff like that. For this film, I don't find it at all offensive or like meaning I don't get a vibe that it's ill-intended when I'm watching it.
The only thing
I see it for its camp value and it's fun. I feel like it's so homoerotic and homocentric. I feel like it's more nice towards gay people than it is bad. Like I feel like it's accidentally does some things that are probably distasteful nowadays.
Mm.
And people are just cynical nowadays. We're seeing the worst in everyone.
But yeah, I don't think it meant it to be bad as well, and I don't find you it bad. I don't think it's mean.
There's no mean spirits in the film anyway. I don't think
when Silence of the Lambs came out there was a series of protests around America inspired by that film, basically saying it was transphobic, and actually there was sort of wide protests around how Hollywood treated gay people and trans people within films, and one of the films that they mentioned within that was Sleepaway Camp. But I wonder, having watched it, because I never saw the film at that time, but I remember it being lumped in with that. I remember it was just politically convenient for the people who were protesting Hollywood to do that, but whether they'd even seen the film.
Yeah. They just heard the plot synopsis.
It's not actually about a trans character.
Well, it's not, and you know,
it's about a boy who's been forced to live in another gender.
Yeah, it's not his choice, and it's not his. Not that it's to me being trans is a choice, but it's not his. It's not coming from within. It's coming from within. It's being forced on him by Aunt Martha, who up until now I thought was fabulous, but now I don't like her anymore.
And on that basis, that he's been forced to live in his own gender from a modern perspective, you would always say, well, actually, that's actually quite, that could almost be a positive argument for it to be trans affirmative, being forced to live in a gender that you don't identify with.
Is
barbaric.
Yeah, he's walking around in the wrong body.
Yeah. It's quite a nice little spin in it. Like that.
Good for you, Sleepaway Camp. Good for you. we'll let you off with the ball to you,
Scott. Although, surely, you know, you should be able to decide your gender, not your aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, yeah. Because there's plenty of aunts out there, mums out there, who will be dressing someone who knows that they're a girl as a boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or who knows that they're a boy as a girl. And that's what happens in this film.
A random bit of trivia. H.P. Lovecraft, his mother dressed him as a girl until he was about 8 years old.
Really?
Because she really wanted a girl.
You're going to enjoy living with us so much. Yes, I know you are. As a welcome home present, I bought you such wonderful new clothes. I just hope that Richard doesn't get jealous that I didn't get him anything. Oh, but then he is such a dear. I'm sure that he won't mind. You see, I've always wanted a little girl.
But of course, when my husband left... Oh, well, that's all water under the bridge, as I always say. Water under the bridge. But it certainly will be a nice little surprise when Richard comes home to find a little girl in the house. Yes, I've always dreamed of a little girl just like you. I mean, we already have a boy, so another one simply would not do. Oh, no, absolutely not. A little girl would be so much nicer, don't you think so, Angela? Angela, such a lovely name.
Sleepaway Camp is one of those films where not one of the scenes is boring.
No.
There's something in it to appall you or tickle you or amuse you or turn you on. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's a brilliant film, and it is classed as so bad it's good. And in many ways that's true.
I just don't even see it as so bad it's good though, because I just see it as so good.
Yeah. It's so much fun.
I feel like I'm laughing with it.
Yeah.
I feel like it almost knows
how... It's almost a bit of a... Yeah, it's got a bit of a parody vibe to it, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether that's just because we like the film, so we're wishing that on it.
Yeah, I want it to be good.
Yeah. But it's one of those films... It's great fun to watch with someone who hasn't seen it before, just to see their reactions.
I did this time as well, and I don't think I've ever seen someone look so shocked in their entire life. They were just like, what? Yeah. And I was like... Yes. Yeah, I've just seen that.
And when you tell someone you're watching Sleepaway Camp as well, you must always say, do not Google it.
Yeah.
Because when you Google it, the twist is ruined straight away.
Mm.
Have you watched it with Matt?
I haven't watched it with Matt. I don't think I've watched any horror with Matt, but I did watch The Boy.
Oh, yeah.
In the pictures.
Oh, yeah, he's
But no, I've not watched any horror with Matt.
Did you watch this film blind the first time you saw it, like not knowing what the twist was?
No, I knew.
I watched it blind.
Ah, see? Jealous.
I knew there was something at the end. I knew there was a massive twist at the end, but I didn't know what it was, and then I was shocked.
Did you hear about how he filmed the end?
Wasn't it a small person?
No, he got it was a college guy. He said he didn't want to make a girl put on a fake dick. So they got a college students to put on a mask of hair, but he couldn't do it because he was like, oh, damn, you know, everyone in the pictures is going to see me dick. So he had to get pissed first before he did the scene.
Oh,
because he was dead nervous, obviously.
Bless. Well, you would be.
You would.
I just thought it was tragic that poor little Paul died at the end as well.
I know, I didn't like him dying,
but you know, I like a romance with a tragic end.
I liked one thing I still appreciated that this film is the brilliant poster art for it, with the train and with
the trainer with the blade through it.
Blade. Yes. It's so perfectly 80s. You don't get anything more 80s than that.
Yeah. So Sleepaway Camp is does everything it says on the tin and more.
But don't watch the sequels.
Don't watch the sequels.
Bit of trivia about the sequels or two of the sequels. Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3, one of the main characters is played by Bruce Springsteen's daughter. Pamela Springsteen.
Wow.
Who plays Angela in this?
She plays Angela in the sequels.
Yeah. They're really, really bad. I watched both of them because they were on Netflix a while back, and
I couldn't do it. I got half an hour into two and I couldn't do it. I'll watch most things and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
They were atrociously bad, and there was just nothing redeeming about them, and really, really, whereas I felt like the first one was really nice and I didn't think there was any mean spirit. I felt like there was mean spiritedness in these two. I found them really transphobic and really offensive.
Right.
And it kind of upset me at times. I was like,
oh wow.
I didn't like what I was watching. There was mean jokes and comments that you just felt more aimed and daggered.
Yeah.
It was not an enjoyable experience. Don't know why I continued to watch both, but I wouldn't ever again.
I forgot to mention one of my favourite scenes. I think it's where Mel is talking to Meg, and randomly in the background, with no explanation, there's Ron doing weights.
Yes. He's threatening Ricky, and Ron's in the background doing the lifts and the weights with his tiny. He's got the smallest shorts of anyone. At one point, they look like briefs.
Yeah. What's the point of shorts that don't cover anything?
Well,
every point.
Well, you might ask.
Well,
it's like coming to New York Pride. you'll see the point.
Well, yeah, that was the point. So I could see
the point. The point, yes. If you
I think Ron, especially that in that character, that shows what they were aiming for. It's like they were going for the macho-ness, yeah. And it straight into homoeroticism, I think.
Yeah. Well, if you like short shorts, if you like camp overacting, if you like really good kills,
paedophiles getting boiled.
If you like paedophiles getting boiled, if you like bullies being stabbed up the vajayjay with what you call them,
curling tongues.
And if you like, you know what scene I love actually? I love the bit where Meg, EG, gets stabbed in the shower and Mel finds her, and then has like a 2-minute rant, like a soliloquy of what he's going to do.
Yeah.
He has a few of them.
Oh, yeah, because he blames Ricky, doesn't he?
And he's really violently against them for no reason. Yeah. There's no reason why it would have been Ricky.
No.
There's no evidence at all. No. But he's obsessed.
He does get an arrow through his neck, so I suppose.
Yeah. Which, by the way, Angela does not participate in any camp activity the entire time she's there, but she's picked up some serious archery skills.
She really has.
Yeah. So where did that come from?
So we love it. Unanimous love for
Sleepaway Camp. Absolutely perfect.
Once you've watched it, you could watch it straight after. You could watch it again. Yeah. Go back to the start, watch it again.
You could. And actually, it's deceptively clever, because when you watch it, you see that there are more clues throughout the film about who the killer is as well.
Yeah,
even when you know the twist, it's still worth a watch just for some of the craziness.
Yeah, if you want something loud, camp, non-PC, very funny, then Sleepaway Camp's the film for you. Camp, kitsch, classic. So that brings us to the end of this one. We hope you've enjoyed it, and if you want to get in touch with us, then our email is screamingqueens@gmail.com. Oh, I've started the blog. I've started the Screaming Queens blog. I've written one entry in it like 2 weeks ago and I haven't done anything since. But a lot happened in the last week, so I'll be writing more. And we're all going to contribute to it. So if you'd like to read our ramblings as well as listen to us, then it's really easy. It's screamingqueens.com, screamingqueens.com. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on that as well. Leave us a review on iTunes. If you haven't subscribed to us yet, then please subscribe. If you enjoy us and you know people who will enjoy us, then please share our links with them. Tweet. And yes, thank you for tuning in, and we will see you very soon.